Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Well, we've spoken about Solidarity's billboard advertising on the highway intended to embarrass the government when everyone comes to town for the G20. And we've talked about the fact that the GNU has sort of come into line to behave nicely while all the dignitaries are in town. But I thought, given the fact that it's due to happen next week, next week or the week, I'm losing track, the 22nd and 23rd of November, I thought I'd get a take on what exactly is the G20, what does it do, and is it really worthwhile having? And for this discussion, I've invited veteran financial journalist Jonathan Katzenellenbogen to join me. Jonathan, do we have you on the line?
Yes. Hi, Sarah. Good morning.
Morning. Let's go start with the basics, and that what exactly is the G20? How is it comprised?
The G20 consists, contrary to its name, G20, it consists of 19 countries, most of whom are the largest 20 countries in terms of GDP. That is, except Argentina and South Africa. South Africa is, I'm sorry to say this, a bit of an imposter here, mm-hmm. but it was granted its G20 status because of, one, the Mandela legacy, and because the G20 was originally a solely financial, a meeting place for finance ministers and governors of central banks, the governor of our reserve bank and our finance minister were the only representatives of our country at the time, earlier on. But later, after the global financial crisis, it was it took on a larger role, and it became a summit meeting. And in this process, South Africa was included, although we're only 40th in terms of GDP. So at work here was the Mandela legacy and relatively sophisticated and well-regulated financial markets. That was also a consideration. Okay. And so the host for the summit rotates every year. So last year it was Brazil. And for the past year, we have been had the presidency of the G20. And in the run-up to this, there have been a whole lot of meetings of finance ministers, health ministers, businesses has met. There's a B20 that is met here in Johannesburg. And now on November the 22nd and 23rd, there'll be a summit meeting. So apart from these 19 countries, which include South Africa and Argentina, of course, you know, the US, China, Russia, and all the others will be here. Putin won't be here. And Trump, of course, has said earlier this week, over the weekend rather, that he will not be coming to South Africa. You also have the heads of the European Union and the African Union that are members. I just want to backtrack a bit here and say that one of the reasons South Africa is a member is because we're an African country and Africa would not be represented mm-hmm. in the grouping. And the same for the Spanish-speaking Latin American countries. Mm-hmm. So Brazil is represented, but of course they speak Portuguese in Brazil, mm-hmm. not Spanish. Mm-hmm. Hence, they put in Argentina, which is has the largest economy of the Spanish-speaking Latin American countries.
Right. Why did it change from being what strikes me as probably more useful in finance ministers and central bank governors responding to emerging market crises to becoming a sort of world leader summit? I mean, my instincts suggest that the summits largely become whatever, or partly whatever the host country wanted to be. And I suspect that South Africa is going to punt for more involvement by African countries on various world bodies, World Trade Organization, IMF, etc. And yet we really don't carry the economic heft to justify being there. How did it come to be this sort of broad-based thing?
Well, there was with the collapse of Lehman Brothers in 2008, excuse me, there was the world leaders wanted to be seen to be doing something about the global financial crisis, the GFC as it became to be known, because of its consequences, became so big and so scary that they took on a bigger role. And since then, it's been a summit meeting. But I agree with you entirely. You know, there are two criticisms of the G20. One is that, you know, it's largely and deals with economic type issues, some of the longer term issues, some sort of crisis management issues. But, you know, these are dealt with elsewhere. Mm. The four of all these is the finance ministers and central bank governors, heads of the Reserve Bank, meeting in Washington during the annual meetings of the IMF and World Bank every September. And they also meet in around about in what they call their spring meetings 6 months prior to that, in the Northern Hemisphere spring in about April or so. So, you know, having this is sort of a bit extraneous. But I think one of the reasons it's perpetuated is because, not because of what comes out of it necessarily, is that it brings together a lot of world leaders. Mm. I think over 60 world leaders, heads of countries, prime ministers and presidents, heads of government and presidents, will be there at the in Johannesburg. So there's a great chance for one-on-one meetings, regional meetings, and so forth, and other meetings that don't have much to do with the G20 at all. Mm. So it's like, you know, so many people go to the funerals of great leaders when they pass away, not out of, you know, partially out of mourning, but also because it affords the opportunity to meet many leaders who will be in one place at one time. And these one-on-one meetings are useful. So I think that's a large reason for it. And that is the reason it's perpetuated. Mm. And after all, you know, if people want to come to this, they can come and take advantage of it. And, you know, the sorts of issues that are raised here are raised elsewhere in the UN and in financial fora and on one-on-one meetings. So, you know, its value, I think, really is these one-on-one meetings. Mm. And, you know, they kind of countries have a lot going on with other countries. And, you know, they need head of state or the head of government input, and this is where it comes, you know, towards pushing towards the final deal in these one-on-one meetings. Mm. One of the big issues that President Ramaphosa wants to raise at the meeting in 10 days' time is that of global inequality. And last week, Professor Joseph Stiglitz, Nobel Prize winner, economics prize winner, and much celebrated by the left because of his views on development and AIDS and so forth, came up with this report commissioned by South Africa. President Ramaphosa commissioned it about reducing global inequality. And the proposal is, guess what? Let's have a permanent panel looking into global inequality. So it raises it could raise this on the international agenda. But I think that, you know, it's better to have more inequality than less. And it's perhaps better for social cohesion and democracy. But at the same time, you know, to achieve to reduce inequality, the experience universally has been that, you know, in the early stages of industrialization and rapid growth, there's inequality grows. But as governments get the resources to deal with inequality, and if governance is good and their healthcare, education systems are good, they can then reduce inequality. My view is that the stress, certainly for South Africa at this stage, should be just growth.
Yeah.
You know, China, the reduction in poverty, and aim at the reduction in poverty, which does take place through growth. Mm. It's, you know, China is the greatest example of this. You know, they're spectacular economic growth for decades of above around 10%. At first didn't yield much, but later there was a tremendous reduction in poverty. And now, guess what? There's a reduction in inequality. So making this an aim on its own does really little good. But, you know, in the end, countries will follow their own policies. Mm. On this.
Yeah, well, I must say the stress of global inequality I find rather embarrassing, because ANC policy has consistently, even having lost the majority voting portion of the public, and it's now a minority party, albeit the biggest one, it not just doesn't change failed policy that's been in place for 20 odd years, but it really is doing nothing to adopt policies that will see the growth and see that desperate need to reduce unemployment in a situation where we have an emergent black middle class, and the inequality, the gap between the poor and the black and the black upper and middle classes is greater than the inequality between the poor and white South Africa. So, you know, it almost seems like he's just, the embarrassment is he's out there trying to beg for favors and aid and not do the hard work which those countries, whether they're autocrats or democrats, have done in achieving higher levels of growth.
I agree with you absolutely. South Africa needs that growth. You know, it's 1%, around 1% growth this year. It's totally inadequate. So for the past few years, in fact, our per capita income has been slightly declining, and rates of poverty rates in South Africa have initially declined, but since I think about 2011, this has not been the case, and inequality has increased. I just wonder what if there's this expert panel or commission to be do a report on South Africa, what would they say? It would be useful for Stiglitz and Co. to come up with a report on South Africa and look at the various policies. You know, BEE, you know, these big corporate stakes held by empowerment groups. And the empowerment groups have been able to access financing to get hold of it. What's their what's their real value added? Has this added to productivity and has led to inequality without really the benefits of growth, because it's just a switch in ownership rather than the creation of new assets.
New business. Yeah.
And the hold on, you know, another avenue of BEE, of course, has been the state-owned enterprise and the state through procurement, which is, we don't know the extent of it, but there's a premium to be paid by the in procurement by BEE groups, and we don't know how much of this is accepted by the state, but that also that can't lead to economic growth and certainly leads to some sort of redistribution. But again, it's at a penalty for the economy as a whole.
Yeah.
It would have been very useful had this report included at least an addendum on inequality on South Africa and its reasons. I think it might have been quite embarrassing.
Yeah, I think there's probably from a tactical point of view, there's going to be some reliance on the fact that South Africa was removed from the Financial Action Task Force's grey list as not providing sufficient means to deal with funding for terrorism and similar activity. How big a thing is that actually likely to be in the greatest community?
Being on this grey list, it would be pretty embarrassing. Yeah. After all, you know, here we're hosting the finance ministers from the largest economies in the world. And, you know, they say, hang on, you're still on the grey list. What's happening there? And getting off that grey list, I think they've worked the Treasury, which is well run. It's one government department that is well run and has good people, managed to get us off it, off that. But we couldn't, you know, it would have been raised a big question over our hosting of the event had we continued to be on that. Mm-hmm. And I think also, and that was important for them to do, to really rush this as they've done over the past 18 months in dealing with this. And it was the right thing to do. Because, you know, the implication is, oh, you're laundering basically, your money laundering rules allow you to launder dirty money, and you're open to terrorist financing. Mm. So the big thing is we've got to really stay off that, the Financial Action Task Force's list. And the other thing that I see that Ramaphosa did on the eve of the summit, which has hardly been noticed, or the connection has hardly been noticed, but I think there is a very strong connection in this, is that he managed to get a statement from the GNU saying we're united and strong. On the first weekend of November, they all went out to the
We actually discussed that before you came on, that sort of seeming to get that a docility of agreeing to not ruffle anybody's feathers.
Yes, at least for the next few weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
And
what?
Bear in mind that the budget, you know, the medium-term expenditure framework is coming up on Wednesday.
Right. And what? I mean, we as Joburgers have our awareness of the G20 has simply been in the fact of seeing certain select areas undergo infrastructural repairs like potholes and streetlights and markings, etc. But it looked at from our perspective, except for the direct some of the improvements on the direct links between the Sandton where people are staying and the airport and Nasrec where they'll be having the summit, surely the rot of in Joburg will not go unnoticed.
No, I don't know. It won't. But you know, there'll be. Essentially, you know, there's, I think many will be staying here in Sandton, you know, where the smart hotels are. So they'll be staying here and they'll be going to Nasrec so that they can go along the M1 from Sandton.
Mm.
And, you know, they'll be rushed along. There'll be lots of convoy escort with motorcycles and so forth, making it a lot easier. So they won't, you know, they won't go through the parts of Johannesburg where there are lots of potholes. And, you know, Sandton has been cleaned up quite a bit.
Mm.
You know, they're fresh road markings. Most of the robots seem to be in working order. Although I just wonder with the rain, what's going to happen now?
Right.
Because... You know, the potholes suddenly appear from nowhere after the rain.
Right.
And robots suddenly are not working. So they might have to deal with a lot of maintenance. But the problem is, you know, this is a one-off. This is one-off maintenance by the council for a what they call a high impact event.
Yeah.
But forget it. You know, this is not. This sort of level of maintenance isn't going to continue after this event.
Right.
So it's very much a one-off.
Just finally, do we need it? I mean, is it of any value?
Look, yeah, I don't think it really breaks the budget. I calculated that it's something like 0.04% of the budget. you know, clearly we could have bought a few schools with that and established a few schools with that and done a lot else. But it's not going to offset the need for a, a VAT tax rise or, it's a pity, you know, but the ANC likes this sort of international recognition. It puts South Africa on the map. But I think, you know, it is a waste of resources and time. Let someone else do it and let the president go and see that. But, you know, kind of governments love this sort of glory. You know, it brings people to town and they think they're going to get lots of investment and business out of this, but it doesn't really work out that way.
Jonathan, thank you very much for joining us.